Matt laid out enough explosives to ensure the total destruction of the two-story building the girls had been held prisoner in, and anything that might be close to the structure. He placed charges beneath support beams and posts, against the walls at stress points, and would lay the final charge against the front door. He began cutting the fuses, guessing at the time of each fuse. That done, he moved to the window and pulled the rope taut, securing his end around a support post. He pushed the bars away from the window and motioned for the girls to gather at the window.
Use the rope one at a time, hand over hand, kids. Drop down to the other side of the wall and stay close to it. Jenny, your grandfather says you've got nerve. You think you and three or four other girls can slip around to the corral and steal some horses?
Yes, sir!
Okay. Follow the arroyo around and get the horses. Two apiece, and lead them around to this wall. We don't have time for saddles. Grab a handful of bridles if you can find them. If not, you know how to grab onto a mane. Walk them around here and keep them quiet. When I give you the word, swing on and follow this arroyo to where you'll see a lady waiting for you. Her name is Lori. She'll lead you over the rise into safety. You understand?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Jenny. You first. Go.
As the last girl was hand-to-handing it across the wall and dropping out of sight, Matt saw the first of the horses being led up to the wash. Bodine moved quickly to the door, picking up the flat bar on his way over.
You all leaving in...
His words hung in his throat as he stood open-mouthed, staring at the vastness of the empty room. He turned to yell, just in time to catch the flat bar in the center of his forehead. Matt closed the door and ran to the window.
Walk your horses out of here. Be quiet and move.
The girls, riding two to a horse, began moving up the wash.
Just a little more time, Lord.
Matt stood by the window and counted them. Jenny was on a pony by herself and was out of sight. When he counted 25, he slipped into his considerably lighter pack and ran back to the door and lit the fuse, then moved swiftly around the room, lighting fuses. When the last one was sputtering, Bodine was across the rope and over the wall in two heartbeats and running up the wash. Matt turned, drawing a Colt and earing back the hammer as he did so. The man was on the second floor of the building he had just left, leveling a rifle in Bodine's direction. Bodine's shot missed, but drove the man back inside the building. Then, the charges blew. Bodine ran for the ridge and scrambled up just as Wellman and Sam opened up with rifles from their high-up vantage point.
Lousy place to build a fort in the first place.
Ain't nobody come out of that rubble, Matt. I seen one man blowed clear out a window and high up in the air out of the second story. I hope to hell it was Lake.
Yeah, me too. But for right now, let's get gone.
Wellman and Sam took the lead, the kids in the middle, and Matt and Lori bringing up the rear. The going was very slow, for the rain had picked up, and the kids kept falling off the wet backs of the horses. Wellman left the trail and plunged them into the brush.
We gotta make the mining camp. This way's longer, but it's smoother riding for the youngins.
The kids were game. Matt would give them that. Not a one cried or complained during the tortuous ride. When one fell off, she just scrambled right back on again without a word and kept on going. It was no more than 10 miles, over some of the roughest country in the Southwest, to the first of the many mining camps that dotted that part of the territory along the Mexican border, but it seemed to be taking them forever to reach it. And none of them could understand why it seemed that no one from the fort was pursuing them. Finally, Wellman was forced to call a halt. The horses needed a break, and the weather had turned from bad to just plain lousy. Jenny stayed close to her grandpa as Matt searched for dry wood and Sam built a fire under an overhang. Lori started brewing coffee in every container they had. The kids were given hardtack and jerky to chew on.
I think those at the fort have circled and are waiting for us between here and the mining camp. They'd guess that we have to get the kids to some sort of civilization, and that's the closest inhabited area. And they also know that none of us, including the kids, can be allowed to live. Working with the Apaches would be bad enough in the minds of settlers, but stealing kids to sell into bondage would be putting a noose around all their necks. They have to get rid of us. They don't have a choice in the matter.
They've killed other kids. I've seen them do it.
There we have it. These people are the lowest of the low. I don't think we can afford to go busting up in that mining camp. Lake and his people may have beat us there and taken over the place.
We're lying in wait just outside the camp.
I was grabbed from my folks' farm just across the border from Nogales, Mexico. We could head there.
How many people live around there, girl?
Not many.
Enough to fight off maybe 50 or 75 hard cases like them back at the fort?
No, sir.
Ah, well, that's out then. Folks living along the border got enough grief without us bringing more to their doorsteps.
They're expecting us to head west or north. They won't be expecting us to backtrack and head east.
Yeah, right back through their own territory. Half a dozen or so miles east of the fort, we can cut north, ride through the Huachucas, and head for the army fort.
Let's get the jump on them then. Let's go!
They backtracked, heading into the San Rafael Valley area, the steady fall of rain muffling their horses' hoofbeats and helping to wash away their tracks. Sam stayed a mile or so ahead of the column, scouting the terrain for outlaws and Apaches. For sure, Lake would have gotten word to Chapo, and he and his band would be looking for them. Just before night began to fall, Sam found a blowdown, several acres of storm-fallen trees, thick with underbrush. Working swiftly, they all pitched in to weave together a crude shelter for themselves and the horses and made ready for the night. They chanced a fire, a necessity, for they couldn't afford to let any of the kids come down with pneumonia. They found plenty of dry wood buried beneath underbrush and fallen trees, and the fires were built under overhangs so the smoke would vanish through the limbs. Lori put together a stew of sorts, and that just about finished what supplies they had left.
Can't risk a shot bringing down any game. Sam and me will make some traps and see if we can't snare some rabbits. Sam's got his bow. Maybe we'll get lucky and he can bag an antelope or a javelina. If not, we're gonna be traveling with mighty empty bellies.
But we'll be alive.
The traps set during the night got them a few rabbits, and Wellman brought in three big rattlesnakes.
What are you gonna do with those?
Eat them. They's right tasty meat. Tastes just like chicken.
He began skinning the snakes, cutting away the edible parts, and wrapping them in leaves, tossing them on the coals to bake.
Won't be long. I cut them sliver thin so they'll bake quick. We're gonna have a long pull today with precious little time to rest, so eat up and let's get gone.
They crossed the west fork of the Santa Cruz and headed northeast toward Parker Canyon, where Wellman knew of a lake.
Probably the best fish you ever stuck in your mouth. Fish practically jump on the hook. I was always told that Apaches don't eat fish, so the lake will be full. We can lay low there and bake enough fish to take us on into where the Soldier Boys is, and you children can be safe.
The rain stopped, and it turned hot as they moved into rolling hill country, perfect for an ambush. Little of the storm they had endured in the mountains had reached this part of the country, and the horses kicked up dust as the survivors rode on. Twice during that day, they spotted dust in the distance, and both times they quickly went into whatever cover was available to them. The first dust was to the north, and it bypassed them, traveling east to west. The second dust was caused by a roaming band of Apaches, and the Apaches were looking for trouble, with all senses working overtime. They reined up, sat their ponies for a few seconds, and then wheeled about and were gone in a cloud of dust. A few seconds later, not a sign of them could be seen.
Now, they didn't spot us, but they sensed something was wrong. They'll be coming for us, and when they do, it'll be sneaky as a ghost.
How far are we from the canyon?
Too damn far. How many did you count in that bunch, Matt?
About a dozen.
Shit, that's a bunch of them savages. War party. Traveling light, too. Damn, people have ride a good horse to death and then eat it. I hate anybody who mistreats a horse.
Is there anything about an Apache you like, Dick?
Oh, yeah. I like them when they're dead.
Matt saw a bush move ever so slightly about 300 yards out. It might have been the breeze rustling through it, or it might be an Apache moving closer, utilizing every bit of cover he could find, and they were experts at that. Matt could let him come closer while he pondered their situation. The location wasn't that bad. The four of them were on a rise, the highest point around. The girls and the horses were behind them in a depression, where they had stopped to take cover when they spotted the second dust. But they would have to ration water very carefully, making sure the horses got enough in case they had to make a run for it. Chapo didn't pay the slightest bit of attention to Indian superstition. He'd just as soon fight at night as during the day. Might call him an Indian atheist, among other things. Matt looked at the bush again. It had moved, just as he had suspected it would. It was maybe 5 feet closer than before. He pointed that out to the others.
Jenny, give me that short-barreled carbine out of my saddle boot and join Miss Laurie. I taught you how to shoot, girl. Make them all count.
Other kids began scrambling for the spare rifles and pistols.
A game bunch of kids. The future of this country. And I think it's in pretty good hands.
Well, that's put right good. That's plumb poetic. Now, why don't you just shoot that Apache that's slipping up over yonder by that clump of manzanita just to the left of that sycamore? I would, but you're in the way.
Sam suspected it was a little more than that. Wellman wanted to see if a half-breed would shoot another Indian. He should have known better. Plains Indians never did have much use for the desert tribes. Sam waited until the Apache made another move. The Apache tried to lunge back into cover. Sam locked eyes with the old mountain man.
You satisfied now?
I ain't got no idea what in the world you're jabbing about.
Right.
That one behind the bush is about 200 yards off.
Wellman adjusted the rear sight of his long-barreled .44-40.
Let's take him out. You boys dust him out and I'll nail him.
The slugs must have stung the Apache, for he rolled to one side and tried to fling himself into deeper cover.
Now! Good work, girls!
What'd you get, girl?
Two dead and two wounded. Jenny got one of the dead.
They'll pull out. Their medicine is bad. Regardless of what we were told about Chapo, he's still an Apache. Four dead and two wounded have cut his band by half. Indians don't fight to take those kinds of losses. But they'll be tailing us all the way to the fort. You can bet on that. Just waiting for a chance to take one or two of us out.
That's right.
The Apache must have thought that his medicine was not just bad, but awful. They followed the group for several hours that day, then dropped back and headed southwest toward the border. Matt pointed to several thin lines of smoke rising from the southeast.
Smoke? Something's up that's made them edgy.
Sam sat his saddle and watched them go, then rode up onto a ridge to get a better look and to make sure it was not a ruse. It was not. The Apaches were indeed leaving. Just a few minutes later, they all found out the reason why, as a patrol of cavalry rode into view.
I'm Captain Gibbs. May I inquire as to why you people are out in the middle of the Apache country with these children?
Quickly, Bodine explained.
And you are?
Matt Bodine. Sam Two Wolves, Dick Wellman. That's Jenny, Dick's granddaughter. And this is Lori. She was looking for her brother.
Several of the troopers shifted nervously in their saddles. They knew their captain's orders, and none of them liked it. They liked even less the fact that Sam Two Wolves had shifted his horse and the muzzle of his Winchester was now pointed directly at Sergeant Larson's belly. Miss Laurie's rifle was carelessly laid across her saddle horn, the muzzle aimed at Lieutenant Packard's stomach. Wellman's rifle was laid across the saddle horn, the muzzle pointed straight at a trooper's belly. Bodine held the reins in his left hand, his right hand near the butt of a Colt. If the captain tried to carry out his orders, a lot of people were going to die. Captain Gibbs noticed all that, and also noticed that several of the young girls were armed. He had his orders, but sometimes out in the field, one had to put common sense into play. Gibbs knew he was dead, cooling meat if he tried to arrest the four adults for violating the territory of Mexico, destroying a fort, and killing several Mexican nationals with explosives. He had 25 men with him. 10 would die in a matter of seconds. And if the adults started shooting, so would the armed girls. And who among them was going to shoot a child?
Mr. Bodine, I have a bit of a problem here. The government of Mexico has demanded your arrest for violating their sovereign territory, for murder, and for destroying an army post. Mr. Lake claims that he bought the children from Chapo out of the goodness of his heart to prevent them from being placed in the hands of slave traders.
He's a liar! Him and Chapo have a deal worked out, and all of us here will swear to that!
How do we know you're really U.S. Cavalry? Those uniforms may be stolen. You may be part of Lake's gang for all we know.
Matt, I'm from Sweetwater. Jim Harris. My daddy had the Rockin' V until that winter 2 years ago wiped us out. We met several times.
Yeah, I remember you, Jim. You know about your father?
I got word several months ago. Ma wrote me. She's gone back to Kansas to live with her sister.
I know Sergeant Larson, Matt. Met him years ago in Utah territory. They're soldier boys, all right.
So what do we do?
My suggestion is that we ride to the canyon and make camp. Let these young ladies have a proper bath and a hot meal, and discuss this matter like civilized men.
And women?
Gibbs looked at the muzzle of her Winchester, which had shifted and was now pointing at his belly. The muzzle silently spoke volumes.
Right. By all means, miss.
Y'all head on out, and we'll take the drag. Someone's got to keep an eye out behind you.
That's very considerate of you.
Oh, well, think nothing of it. We're only too happy to help out the army.
It was at times like these, Gibbs thought, as he took the lead at the head of the column, that he wished he'd followed his mother's wishes to become a carriage maker. The girls splashed and had a good time flouncing around in the cold waters of the lake at the canyon while their freshly washed clothing dried on makeshift lines. The men, their backs to the young ladies, talked over coffee.
Of course we know that Lake and Porter are filth and liars. We know all about Captain Morgan and his odious business. But since he never puts in at any American port, there's very little the government can do about it. But Mexico, more specifically the state of Sonora, has lodged an official protest with our government concerning your actions. So what do you suggest we do about it?
Ignore it? Hell, Captain, the kids were kidnapped and being held against their will while certain officials down there were being paid off to turn their backs to it.
Can you prove that?
You know I can't.
Then the government, our government, has no choice but to press on with the charges against you.
You know what all this is, don't you, Matt, Sam? It's all a crock of bullshit.
I beg your pardon, sir.
I'll blow it out your asshole, Captain. You think I rode into this mess blind? I sent 100 wires off seeking information before I started down here. Our government received 50 or 60 protests a month from the Mexican government for one thing or another. They've been doing it ever since the Alamo fell, 40 damn years ago. And all of a sudden you're gonna single us out for charges? Shit! Get to the bottom line, soldier boy!
Matt was confused for a moment, studying Gibbs's flushed face. Then pieces started falling into place. He hoped he was wrong.
The bottom line is this. Chapo, Lake, and Porter, right, Captain?
Sam looked at his blood brother.
Have I missed something along the way?
Let me put it this way. A government isn't above turning its back to some unlawful act if its interests are served in the process, right, Captain?
I didn't come up with this idea, Bodine, and I don't like it either.
Do your men know about it?
No. That's why I couldn't say anything about it out in the field.
Lake and Porter would be as easy as breathing. So it has to be Chapo.
Certain, rewards will be given in return for his death.
I don't need rewards. I own a very large ranch up in Wyoming, as does Sam. But I can't speak for either Sam or Wilman.
Well, I struck a rich vein years ago. I got enough to live on for 5 lifetimes.
I have an idea. Let the money go to Lori. You can't raise Jenny, Dick, but Lori could, with some financial help.
I just told you I got gold aplenty, but that ain't a bad idea of yours.
You know, Captain, if we don't agree with this, all we'd have to do is contact some reporter and public sentiment would turn against the army.
I realize that. However, there is a small matter of a shooting up at the crossing still to be resolved.
Matt held up a hand.
Enough, Captain. You've got a lot of green troopers, don't you?
More than 75% of them, yes.
All right. Sam is half Cheyenne. I was practically raised by the Cheyenne, and Wellman is an experienced Indian fighter. The feeling is that a very small band of highly seasoned men could probably do more than a large force of basically untrained troops, right?
Yes.
Well, why didn't you just ask us to do it? That's what gripes me. Why all this elaborate scheming?
You've never been around a bunch of high-ranking officers, Sam?
Fortunately, no.
For your sake, try to keep it that way.
They rode to the fort in the Huachucas and rested. Over a lot of protestations from the both of them, Dick sent Lori and Jenny back to his small spread on the Utah-Idaho border and told them both to stay put. He had hands on the ranch. They would be taken care of. He then found himself a lawyer and had a will drawn up, changing his old will, leaving everything he had to Lori and Jenny. They liked each other, they had each other, and that was about it as far as family went for either of them. Families or friends of the other girls were notified that they were still alive.
You act like you're not coming back from this foray, Dick.
Don't expect I will, Two Wolves. Don't always want to. Been in some pain lately. That arrowhead's moved, I reckon. I told Laurie we'd look for her brother. If we don't find him, and I pray we don't, you tell her we did and that he's dead, boys.
That would be the best thing. Where do we start in this quest? Anybody got any ideas?
I'm just going along for the ride. I've always enjoyed risking my life on quixotic ventures.
Quixotic. You know, I wintered with a fellow once that read Shakespeare. You and him would have hit it right off. Where to start? Well, let's take the hard part first and tackle Chapo. Porter and Lake is going to be easy. Chapo is going to be a grizzly, I'm thinking.
I made a list of supplies you requested, Matt. Dick and I agreed with it. But there is a question we both raised. Are we going on an extended expedition?
We just might. I've spoken with some army scouts, and they've shed some light on why Chapo's been so hard to catch. When it gets too hot here in the territory, he and his people hightail it down into the Sierra de la Madera Mountains.
The Sierra Madres. I always wanted to see them mountains, never got around to it. It fits. Chapo would have him a rancheria down there, all tucked away in the mountains where he could relax and hide. Now I see why y'all got that dynamite.
Yeah.
They would leave their horses at the fort. Hopefully they would come out of this alive to pick them up later. Then the three of them chose big, tough horses of a light brown color to better fit with the land they would be riding into. They all bought, at the army's expense, which irritated the commanding officer at the fort, new clothing, all tan and brown, right from their boots to their hats. They picked their pack horses carefully, choosing only those who appeared to have an even temperament and lots of staying power. The three of them spent several hours putting together the dynamite, from 2 and 3 sticks wrapped together for throwing, to the wrapping and tying together of massive amounts that could bring down the side of a mountain. Then came the early morning hours when everything that could be done was concluded. They had not made plans to pull out that day. They just got up, looked at each other, rolled their blankets and their ground sheets, then walked toward the stables. After saddling up, loading up, and tying down, they strolled over to the mess hall for a cup of coffee. Captain Gibbs was standing on the porch, having a smoke in the pre-dawn hours.
I thought today would be the day.
The officer walked inside with the trio and took a seat at the table.
It goes without saying that if we get down in Mexico and get into trouble, we'd probably better not hold our breaths waiting for the cavalry to come charging to our rescue.
We received word late last evening that Lori and Jenny have arrived safely at your ranch, Mr. Wellman.
That's the biggest load off my mind. They both got them a home now.
What route are you taking?
Straight down. Right through the Huachucas. We'll tackle Chapo first.
Misters Lake and Porter seem to have disappeared.
They ain't gone far. As long as there's gold or silver being mined out of them mountains, a crud like them two will be hanging around looking to steal it.
The hunters finished their coffee and stood up as one.
See you, Captain.
The trio walked outside, swung into their saddles, and put the post behind them, with still an hour to go before the dawning. Once on the trail, the three men discussed their approach to the situation.
Chapo will get word of this. You can bet he's got people back at the post feeding information to him. I ain't never seen it to fail yet, and I've done a lot of scouting for the Army in my time.
I've been thinking that he might take this as a personal affront. The three of us being sent in to take him, when whole armies could not. Might seem very arrogant to Chapo.
Oh, he'll have heard of the three of us, and he'll respect us for what we've done. It'll make him a tad cautious. But he'll still be out to take us, alive if possible, to torture us for as long as he can, see if we die well.
Yeah, they've been singing songs around the fire for those we killed back on the ridge a couple of weeks ago, fueling the hate they feel for us. I keep going over supplies in my head, wondering if we've forgotten anything.
No, I don't think so. There is no magic potion to keep us alive.
Wellman tapped the side of his head and then lifted his Winchester.
Our eyes, our brains, and our guns. That's the best magic I know of.
The Apache seemed to have vanished from the mountains. The three of them rode out of the Huachucas and into the timbered country south of Miller Peak without seeing a single sign of the Apache. It was Bodine who spotted the challenge, hanging from a tree limb along the trail. Three wooden Apache-carved dolls, two of them with tiny necklaces around their necks, the third one a bearded old man in buckskins. The feet of the dolls had been burned.
He's telling us what he's gonna do to us when he catches up with us, or we catch up with him. I told you he knew he was coming after him.
I got a hunch.
I'll lay your cards out.
Let's go visit the ruins of an old Mexican fort.
Real sneaky-like?
Yeah.
That might be something Chapo would do. He'd know we're not just after him, but also Porter and Lake. He just might have some warriors lying in wait for us.
They angle toward the southwest, once more crossing the west fork of the Santa Cruz and staying with it, following it down on the west side toward the border. They rode with rifles across their saddle horns, always searching for sign of the Apaches, but seeing nothing. And the absence of the Apaches made them more and more certain that they were riding toward an ambush at the old fort. Matt pulled his horse to a stop when they were only a few miles from the fort.
Chapo won't be here.
What do you mean? Who the hell else would it be?
Who has more reason to hate us than Chapo?
Lake and Porter.
That's right. This just came to me. Chapo might have warned them that if they didn't stop us, he would no longer ensure their safety plus his cooperation.
A nice way of saying he'd kill them on the spot.
Yeah, Lake and Porter ain't gonna be there. One's just as yeller as the other. They'll leave some flunkies behind to do their work. Let them sit there and sweat. We'll go deal with Chapo and get that over with.
They pointed their horses' noses south, bypassing the fort. If they ever got back this way alive, they'd tend to Lake and Porter. That evening, they stopped to build a fire and eat, then moved on several miles before bedding down for the night.
What do you think about it, Sam? How come the white man and the engine can't get along?
Well, there was and is right and wrong on both sides. Indians don't own the land like the white man thinks he does. And Indians never stayed long in one spot. My father's people drifted around, hunting and living off wild plants. The white man came looking to settle in one spot and farm or ranch. They built permanent shelters. The Indian couldn't understand that. There were some white men who wanted to live in peace with the Indian, and some Indians who wanted peace with the white man. But not enough of each on either side. Stealing horses was a game for the Indians. The whites took it much more seriously. And when an Indian makes war, he goes by the philosophy that little whites grow up to be big whites and therefore will cause trouble when they grow up. So, why not kill them now? And that, of course, is something the white man could not accept. My father could never accept it either. Medicine Horse was a fair man. But look where that got him. The Indian Wars was something my father's people were born to lose. There were too few Indians and too many white people. But my friend, hear this. If all the Indian tribes would have united under one leader, instead of fighting each other all the time, the westward progress of the white man
would have been halted at the Big Muddy. And you can believe that.
Oh, I believe it.
What's so funny?
What you just said about all the tribes coming together. That's what I told your dad back some 30 years ago.
None of them knew much about the desert south of the border, only what they had either read or heard. But they all knew that when a man left a trail, in the woods or the desert, he'd better have a destination in mind, for his life is on the line every moment, waking or sleeping. And nowhere was that more pronounced than when in Apache country, especially when Chapo was around.
I hope that Army scout knew what he was talking about when he told us about water down in this part of the country.
You bet your ass he did. Bill Lewis knows this country is good or better than any white man alive.
Although he didn't say so, I got the impression he'd led some raids down here.
Uh-huh, sure has. You know, deserts are alike in a lot of ways. Two things you gotta keep in mind out here, water and survival. Two of them is one of the same. You either gotta be heading for water, or know where some is if you have to leave out from the way you planned to head first off.
Sam shook his head at the old man's grammar, but knew enough to grasp and retain the wisdom of his words.
Ain't got much leeway for mistakes out here, but the desert's not your enemy. And it isn't your friend. It's neutral. There's water out here that's generally known, and there's water out here that's known for the most part only by the animals and the Apaches, and by a few Army scouts and old codgers like me. You gotta work with the desert, boys. Don't never try to fight it, because you will outwin.
Dick suddenly held out a hand and reined up. Matt and Sam smelled it seconds after the old man. Dust, and a lot of it.
No band of Apaches would be traveling like that. I think, boys, we's about to come nose to nose with a Mex Army patrol.
More than a patrol. It looks like half the Mexican Army is coming our way. We better get our story straight, and we'd better do it quickly.
Buenos tardes, señores.
Afternoon, sir.
Matt guessed at about 100 troops, all well-armed and well-supplied, and from the looks of them, all seasoned veterans. Matt decided to take a chance.
Has war been declared, sir?
War, señor? What do you mean?
This is Arizona territory, sir. If you're not at war with the United States, then you're violating border treaties.
No, señor. It is not we who are in violation, but you. This is Mexico.
No, sir. That miner back yonder in Huachucas who sold us the claim we're riding toward said to follow the Santa Cruz, keeping it to the west of us for about 10 miles, and then we'd come up on our claim.
I am afraid, sir, that you have been misled. You are not from this area, I take it.
No, sir, we're all from Wyoming.
Ah, I see. That explains the confusion. I regret to inform you, señores, that you are in Mexico, the state of Sonora. You are welcome to visit here, of course. We are a very hospitable people. But I am sorry to say that you cannot own land here.
Why, that sorry, low-life, pig-fucking, dick-dragon piece of shit!
I do not know whether I would like to be present when you men find the miner who swindled you. But I must warn you that you are in grave danger riding in this area.
Why is that, sir?
Chapo and his band of renegades have left their stronghold in the Sierra de las Maderas and are heading back to Arizona territory.
Oh, Lord have mercy! Oh, it's a miracle we still have our hair. What do you figure we should do, General?
I am not a general, sir, but thank you for the promotion. Perhaps someday. But for now, I am Comandante Luis de Carrillo. The border is not far. Perhaps you would like to ride with us to it.
Oh, well now, Lord God, that's right kind of you, sir. We'll take you up on that, and maybe whilst we're riding, you could sort of brief us on this Chapo person. We've heard some wild tales about him.
But of course, I can assure you, gentlemen, they are not tales. The man is a monster.
They parted company at the border, all of them finding the Mexicans friendly and open and good compadres to ride with. At the border, Comandante Carrillo pulled Matt to one side and told him where Chapo was hiding.
I hope your hunting is as skillful as your acting, Mr. Bodine.
Matt met the man's dark eyes. They were twinkling with good humor.
You knew all along?
But of course. It saddens me that certain people in our government, yours and mine, are so corrupt. There are many good, decent people on both sides of the border. For my part, there has been an abrupt shift in the offices of the governor of the state. We were riding to put the slave traders at the old fort out of business. Permanente. I was looking forward to placing the outlaws Lake and Porter in front of a firing squad under my personal command.
And Captain Morgan?
We will find him. And if our Navy finds him at sea, the Virgin Princess will be boarded and Captain Morgan will be hanged.
Matt stuck out his hand and the Comandante took it.
Good luck to you, Comandante.
And the same to you, Matt Bodine.
One question, Comandante.
Of course.
This rancheria of Chapo's, will there be women and children there?
No. The warriors leave their families at the reservation. You may use the dynamite you have under the canvas with complete abandon.
Well, I'll just be double-dipped in dog shit. So he knew who he was all along.
They all did. I think with Comandante Carrillo south of the border, Chapo will not return to Mexico. I don't think I'd want Carrillo hunting me.
That's the feeling I got. You notice those troops under his command were all tough, older men. Probably with a lot of experience behind them.
Yeah. So I think Chapo is going to be fighting a last-ditch war. He knows his days are numbered, so he's going to be striking like a mad rattler, hitting anything he can whenever he can.
Let's go get him.
There isn't but one hitch in that.
Both Wellman and Sam looked at Bodine.
He's moved.
They were riding out into the flat desert country, angling to the north and east, heading for the Chiricahua Mountains.
I know the Dos Cabezas in the Chiricahua Mountains. Chapo might be in the Dos Cabezas, but I tend to doubt it. He's in Cochise's old stomping grounds. I'd bet on that. He might even have picked up some of the old boys' braves. Either way, them ranges ain't for no pilgrims to wander in.
Major Carrillo told me something he'd heard from one of his generals. He said that General Sherman, back around 70, wrote to the Secretary of War and said, we had one war with Mexico to take Arizona, and we should have another to make her take it back.
I don't doubt that a bit. Now don't get me wrong, Sam. I ain't badmouth the Plains Indians, none at all. But when it comes to great fighters and just being low-down mean, the Apache tops the list.
That's the first time I've ever heard you come close to paying the Apache a compliment. Even a left-handed one.
Oh, they're the greatest guerrilla fighters that ever lived. Even out here in the open, they could be 20, 30 Apaches hiding not 10 yards away, and most folks would never even see them until it was too late. They can take a mouthful of water, run 30, 40 miles a day. We'll be lucky to do that on horseback. Maybe, Sam, I dislike them so much because I'm so much like them.
Wellman took the lead, leaving Sam and Bodine to scratch their heads and wonder about that last remark. They pulled up in Bisbee late one afternoon. The town was just getting started and made up of three or four wooden frame buildings and dozens of tents of all sizes and descriptions, and the mining town was wild and woolly. They stabled their horses and secured a guard for their supplies for as long as they would be gone. Then they made arrangements with the stable owner to sleep in the loft that night. Both Bodine and Sam thought Wellman was going to hit the man when he charged them a dollar apiece to sleep in the loft. But Wellman chewed his chaw savagely for a moment, glared at the man, and then forked over the dollar. It was the army's money anyway. And the men went off to find a saloon and have a drink. Wellman brightened up considerably when Sam pointed to some, by this time, awfully familiar horses, all of them wearing Triple V brands.
Well, well, now. This could get right interesting. We might be able to catch one of them no-goods and see if he'd like a choice.
What do you mean?
Tell us where Chapo is or get skinned alive.
I see what you mean about being so much like the Apache.
Somewhat now, but there's a difference. I believe the only way we'll ever stop outlawing is to get rid of the outlaws. I never shot a man, engine or white, that wasn't trying to do harm to me or one of mine, you know, family or friends. I never stole nothing in my life, except some feminine affections now and then, and I see the same qualities in you boys that I got in me. If I didn't, I wouldn't have nothing to do with you.
Both the young men grinned.
What's the drill this time?
Bodine stopped a man, a miner from the looks of him.
Is there a law in this town, mister?
Only what you're carrying on your hip, buddy.
Wellman removed the hammer thong from his long-barreled Colt, slipping it up and down in leather a couple of times.
Well, I guess that answers one question. I got me a powerful thirst for some rye with a beer chaser. I do hope none of them scum in yonder start shooting before I can cut the dust out of my throat.
And once you've done that, then you'll start shooting, right?
Why, heavens no, boy. I'm just a peaceful old man living out his last days on Earth in harmony with all the God's creatures.
The half-dozen outlaws recognized them immediately, and one dropped his hand to his gun. Another caught the man's arm, preventing him from opening the fight. Bodine, Sam, and Wellman all saw the movement and filed it away for later reference. The movement didn't make any sense. The three of them were temporarily limited in vision due to just stepping into the murk of the saloon from the bright sunlight. Now would have been a perfect time to take them out. Or try to take them out.
Ryan, a beer for me.
A beer.
The outlaws left the long bar and walked to the rear of the room, carrying their drinks with them.
What the hell's going on?
They've taken seats with their backs towards us. Every one of them.
They know that we're looking for Chapo. They probably knew that 2 days after we agreed to it. Perhaps Porter and Lake figure the easiest way to deal with us is to let us go on in after Chapo. The three of us against several hundred of Chapo's Apaches is not the best of odds any way you want to look at it.
With us out of the way, they wouldn't have to keep looking over their shoulders.
What now? There's too damn many miners in here to just haul her out and let her bang.
And if we go to them into a fight in front of this many witnesses, even though we probably wouldn't go to trial for it, it'd be a black mark against us.
Hell with it, then. I'm hungry. Let's get something to eat.
While they were eating in a tent cafe, the three of them watched as the outlaws left the saloon, mounted up, and rode out. The gunslicks and outlaws headed west, but all knew that didn't mean a thing, since they could and probably would change directions as soon as they reached the edge of town.
They get up in the hills and make camp so they can watch us, see which way we leave out. Them's part of the bunch that held my Jenny. I've a notion to follow them and just shoot them out of the saddle like the hydrophobic skunks they is.
Several men seated close enough to hear what was being said eyeballed the trio, and then got up and moved to a table across the canvas-covered room. It took only one look for the miners to know that these were men who would brook no nonsense. The trio finished their meal, had another cup of coffee, then returned to the stable. Bisbee was an hour behind them at dawn. The land the three men rode across alternated from near barren desert to shady glens invitingly placed under canyon recesses. It was a land perfectly suited for ambush. Bodine called a halt after making 15 miles that first day out of Bisbee. They fixed their evening meal, carefully put out the fire, and moved on several miles before bedding down for the night. They were in Apache country, but the next day would put them smack in the middle of Chapo's country, on the edge of the lonely and dangerous Chiricahua Mountains. The morning dawned hot. An hour's ride, with Wellman at the point, brought them to a spring where they watered their horses and filled up their canteens and then cooked breakfast, all the time keeping a wary eye out for trouble. All of them felt as though 100 hostile eyes were on them.
Then why don't they attack?
They might think we're crazy. Just three men riding into the heart of Chapo's territory. Chapo himself might think we're crazy for doing this.
Worked for me one time up on the plains. Utes had me fair and square. I started babbling and singing and preaching and drooling at the mouth. Then I sat on the bank of a creek and started eating mud. That done it. Them Utes hightailed it out of there. They didn't want no truck with no crazy person. Chapo probably does think we're all nuts, but that ain't gonna cut us much slack. Not for very long, anyways. We got 6 fine horses between us, and it's a mighty curious thing in his mind what we got tied under the canvas on them pack horses. I expect they've been watching us since late yesterday. Some of them's bound to make a move at us today.
They rode single file, with no one talking, and with all senses working hard. With few exceptions, the time for hot meals was done. From this point on, it would be cold biscuits and jerky, washed down with lukewarm water from their canteens. They were abruptly into the mountain range, almost without warning, and the attack came without warning, as they all knew it would. Had not Bodine been watching his horse's ears, they would have been dead men. The ears came up, and Bodine felt the animal tense between his legs.
Here they come!
Sam, who had just taken the point from Wellman, led them into a draw and up into the rocks and timber. An Apache reared up in front of him, hate on his face. The ambush having failed, the Apaches settled down to a waiting game. The three were in a fairly good location, but that had been due to luck, not on the skills of any of them. Just above the rocks was a thick stand of spruce and fir.
We can't just let them get up there. I'll take the high place.
While Wellman kept watch, Bodine picketed the horses in a hollow, grabbed 2 canteens, their spare rifles, a pouch of dynamite, and found himself a good spot from which to fire.
How many?
That don't make no difference. They'll all be here in an hour. Pony left at a gallop while you was gone.
I have a little surprise for them. One I doubt they've ever faced before.
This is a good spot for it, all right.
Heads up! Reinforcements have arrived.
Must have been just over the ridge.
Bodine turned his head and froze as he came nose to snout with a funny-looking varmint. The varmint took off like a shot, heading for the timber, its long banded tail held high as it scampered away.
What the hell was that?
Quatamundi! Hey, some kind of relation to the raccoon.
The expression on your face was priceless. We are confusing the Apache with all this idle chatter. They don't know what to make of it, and some of them have backed away, believing us to be crazy people. So let's keep it up.
Can you preach, Dick?
Oh, I'll say I can. I could talk the devil right out of any sinner that ever lived.
Get to it, then. I'm going to lay out some surprises for our friends.
Repent! You got to repent today, brothers and sisters! I am not fooling around! I'm talking about repenting! I am talking about the terrible, terrible time that awaits you if you do not repent and do it now! It says right here in Revelations, and to them it was given that they should not kill them, but that they should be tormented 5 months. And that torment was as the torment of a scorpion when he striketh the man. And they had tails like scorpions, and there were stings in the tails, and the power was to hurt men for 5 whole months.
With the Apache's attention riveted on Wellman's hellfire and brimstone declamations, Bodine was able to hide his surprises in some very effective places.
Sam, how close is the nearest bunch to me?
About 25 feet directly in front of you and below. I didn't shoot when I saw you laying out the sticks.
I had impure thoughts about a sheep, but I didn't do nothing about it, but I need to confess it anyway. And I... Yeah, God, I about run out of things to confess to. Drop them 3 sticks on top of them, Bodine.
Bodine grinned, picked up 4 sticks wrapped for throwing, thumbnailed a match into flame, and lit the fuse. He let it burn down dangerously close, and then chucked it over the rock he was behind. The fight was out of them for this day. As swiftly as they had opened the initial attack, the Apaches pulled out.
The bodies of the dead are mangled. The same as when they are deliberately mutilated. The souls are doomed to wander forever, never finding a resting place.
Good. Serves them right for ignoring my sermon.
After they were back on the trail for a while, Wellman led them to a small stream and swung down from the saddle, stretching his old bones.
This here's Turkey Creek. After we've done to them today, we can chance a fire and fix us something to eat here, and then ride a couple of miles over to a lake and bed down for the night.
Smack in the middle of Apache country.
That's right. And you can bet that right now they're scratching their heads and wondering what in the hell they done come up against. A couple more fights like the one we just come through, and Chapo will take his band and head for the rocks up in the north part of the range. And if they decide to do that, boys, we are in for some rough going.
Why?
Can't get through there. At least I don't know no way. It's the god-awfulest mess a human being ever laid eyes on. Looks like God just picked up all the rocks he could find and throwed them all down in a jumble. Apaches know the way in and out, but shit, I don't. And boys, you don't want to get trapped in there.
Bodine handed Wellman a stick.
Draw us a map and show us the range, Dick.
Wellman outlined a zigzagging square. He jabbed the point into the earth.
We're here. Way up here is Fort Bowie. There's still some soldier boys there. Fort was built back during the Civil War, and the soldier boys is supposed to be waging war against the Chiricahua Apaches. But the army don't come in here so much, so don't get your hopes up on that. They got long years of fighting ahead of them before Geronimo's through. Now, somewhere up here, there's a valley. It's supposed to be about 50 acres in all. Got good grass and water. But getting to it, that's a problem. The way I heard it, there's only one way in and one way out, and that's a canyon about 4 miles long. Just wide enough for a horse to manage it. As far as I know, there ain't no white man ever found the entrance. Well, or if they did, they blundered in there and never come out.
Then we've got to find it.
Man, I figured you'd say something like that. Boys, the Apaches live for two reasons. To steal without getting caught, and to kill without being killed. And they're the best in the world in doing both. And I ain't bad-mouthing them for it now. That's just the way they's raised. Once taken by Apaches, they's been precious few men ever got away from them. I'm an old man, and I don't know but three men who ever done it. Now, I've rode into and out of the camps of about 20 different tribes. I've been taken unfriendly like 5 times, and I've talked my way out of it. But I'll tell you this, you don't talk your way out of the hands of these Apaches. I want you boys to keep that thought in your mind at all times. Now, let's eat.
They rode about 3 miles from the lake toward the northeast and bedded down in a cold camp. And the nights were chilly. Come the dawning, they chanced a small fire under a low overhang and fixed coffee, extinguishing the fire as soon as the coffee had boiled. They drank coffee and chewed on stale bread and jerky. Then they mounted up and headed north toward the wilderness area. Sam and Bodine saw rock formations unlike anything they had ever witnessed before. Strange, almost eerie upthrustings, stately and silent. Wellman knew what they were thinking, for he had thought the same thing years back.
Blind canyons every way you turn. Apaches trap you up in one of them, you can hang it up.
Awful lot of country for so few Apache.
Yep, that's why we still got our hair. They don't know where we are yet.
At mid-morning, Wellman called a brief halt and pointed.
Sam, you think you could take some field glasses and climb up that rock yonder?
Sam rode around the nearly sheer upthrusting, looking for handholds. When he returned, he was nodding. Wellman and Bodine dismounted and squatted down while Sam pulled off his boots and slipped on moccasins. Matt pulled out the makings and rolled a smoke, as did Wellman. It was dead calm on the twisting canyon floor, and the smoke would linger close, with no wind to carry it to unfriendly noses. Sam stayed on top of the peak for over half an hour, meticulously scanning the terrain in all directions before he carefully climbed down.
Nothing to the south of us. Some very faint fingers of smoke to the north, and signs of dust to the east.
Oh, how far north?
I'd say 5 miles north and east, just past a big balancing rock.
Docking smoke?
No, probably cook fires.
We got luck riding with us. They don't know where we is, but we know approximately where they is, in the wilderness. They're not going to run for the rocks for three of us. They've gathered and are talking about this, trying to figure out if their medicine's bad.
They might not understand dynamite. I remember my grandfather telling me about the first time he heard and felt artillery. He said it was awful. The Indians ran in panic.
Yeah, that's right. The Apaches have sure enough seen what mountain cannon can do. Back some years ago, while the Civil War was going on in the East, the army out here used 12-pounders against Cochise over at Apache Pass. I heard about it. Whipped old Cochise to a fairly well that day and put the fear of God into him. Since then, the Apaches has always been afraid of what they call them thundering guns. They might think that's what we got. How many cook fires did you see, Sam?
Maybe half a dozen all told. I looked several times to be sure my eyes weren't playing tricks on me. They were cook fires.
They've gathered. The dust you've seen was others coming to the gathering for a powwow.
We might just get lucky, if you want to chance it.
What do you have in mind, brother?
Matt laid it out. Wellman and Sam looked at each other, and both shrugged.
It's so crazy it just might work.
Well, then, let's fix us a hot meal and get going.
Some hot food would taste good.
Yeah, especially when you take into consideration it might be our last meal. You know, something about that area with that balancing rock you spoke of keeps nagging at my mind. Well, maybe it'll come to me. But I thought that was east of here.
Both Sam and Bodine could see the old man was worried about something, and it wasn't the bacon and the beans cooking. They left their pack horses behind, stripped of their burdens and well hidden, and left their own horses about a half a mile from where Sam had spotted the heaviest smoke. He had marked the spot in his mind by the huge balancing rock that was just to the south of the smoke. Twice on the way there, Sam climbed atop high rocks to make certain they were on the mark. Each time, they were dead on. They watered their horses and left them on picket pins in a small area with enough good graze to keep them content for the time the men would be gone, and they didn't figure on being gone for more than 3 hours. It was silently understood that if they weren't back by then, they would never return. They all knew that if the horses were found, it would, in all likelihood, mean the end for them, for the Apache would sound the alarm and every trail and pass would be blocked. They walked on into the coolness of the wilderness area. This was lush forest country, with running streams and a few small lakes dotting the wilderness. They walked on in silence, all of them keeping very alert. Wellman suddenly stopped them.
No good, boys. I know where they're meeting now, and there ain't no way we can do what we got in mind.
He squatted down, and Bodine and Sam squatted down with him.
There's a small valley just over that rise yonder. Slopes down real gentle-like. There's no way in hell we could get close enough to do any damage with dynamite. A creek runs dead center of the valley. That should have come to me sooner, but it's been years since I've been here.
Are you sure?
I'm positive. That balancing rock finally brought it back to my mind.
And you suggest we do what?
There ain't no choice in the matter. Sooner or later, we're gonna have to fight the Apaches and them crazy rocks north of here. Look, this ain't no place for conversation. Let's get back to our horses and bypass this gathering. Then we'll talk about it. We're close to death here, boys.
They swung into their saddles and headed back to their pack animals, who seemed very glad to see them. They rode out at dawn, heading northwest toward the point where the timber touched the desert. There, they would cut straight north and stay in the timber all the way up to the western edge of the Crazy Rocks, as Wellman called them.
We'll only be about 8 or 10 miles from Fort Bowie when we cut east into the rocks, but it's a rough 10 miles.
It's hard for me to believe that the Apache could come and go at will just 10 miles from an army post.
Wait till you see the Crazy Rocks.
They stayed in the timber and saw no Apaches or any sign of them during the ride north to the Crazy Rocks.
I can't believe that they're gathering just to discuss the three of us.
The word I got is that Geronimo's trying to bring the Apaches under one leadership. His. The Chapo's the main holdout. Chapo ain't gonna follow no other man. He's a devil with but one thought in his head. To either drive the white settlers out of his land or to kill them. And he'd rather kill them all.
But despite that, Chapo's at the gathering?
Oh, sure. And so is Geronimo and probably Chato and Nana and half a dozen other chiefs. It'll all come to naught, though. They'll fuss and squabble the whole time they're gathered, and all ride off in different directions with their noses out of joint.